This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton will be joining us later this hour with reactions to yesterday's January 6th hearing. But first, a crisis unfolding far from here. And it's been 5 months, 5 months since Russia invaded Ukraine. The war might have slipped out of our daily headlines, but it's still very much happening on the ground.
Tonight, the Russian military intensifying its relentless assault on civilians, striking an apartment building in Kharkiv. And in eastern Donetsk, Ukrainian officials say dozens are dead after a Russian missile hit this five-story apartment building over the weekend. Rescuers diligently combing through the rubble, families desperate for word on their loved ones. This man is looking for his sister and nephew. He says he is waiting for a miracle.
NBC reporting on a Russian military strike earlier this week. Coverage shows that that strike hit an apartment complex, and Ukraine says dozens of civilians died. Hingham Emergency Room Dr. Frank Duggan knows this reality too well. He just got back from a five-week trip to Ukraine. It was his second journey to the country since the war began in February. Both times, he's been working to connect Ukraine doctors with American doctors using telehealth services for everything from checkups to surgeries. Frank Duggan joins us now to talk more about that work. Dr. Duggan, welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, sorry about stumbling on your name there a little bit. I'm so glad to get to talk to you. We tried this once before when you were in country there, and your life was just too wild to be able to connect.
Yeah, we had some difficulty. I think I was traveling on a train between Kharkiv and Lviv at the time.
That's right. Now you've just gotten back. You got back from Ukraine last Thursday night, and I guess I want to ask you, that sound we just played at the top, is that accurate? Is that what it is like there now? Is that what you experienced?
Yeah, it's more than accurate. I think that, again, we've got a lot going on in our country right now, and I hope that we don't get distracted from, you know, the events that are occurring in Ukraine at the present time, because, I mean, it's really awful over there. The amount of civilian casualties is really quite impressive. Probably, you know, in my experience, and I was at the front as well as in Kharkiv, so areas that were, you know, fairly active, there's a lot of civilian injuries. I think that the Russians are indiscriminately bombing everything, you know, schools, places of living, residential areas, train stations, malls, stuff like that. I think that's very much an accurate portrayal of what's going on.
One of the things that struck me, Dr. Duggan, is you told our producer, Amanda Beland, basically that this was a time in your life where you were clearly able to see the distinction between good and evil. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of things in life, you know, have gray boundaries. I don't think this is one of those cases. I think that clearly this is, from the Russian standpoint, I think, you know, kind of the embodiment of evil. I mean, when you're targeting, you know, civilians, children, trying to instill terror in a population and really, frankly, just decimating parts of the country. Some of these cities are just in rubble right now. It's going to take, you know, years for them to recover, you know, with, you know, the electricity gone, the water gone, you know, so many of the buildings, you know, being destroyed. So it's really a tragic situation over there.
You know, one of the things that's interesting about your story and your work, Dr. Duggan, is you are this kind of weaving together of tragedy and hope, responding to the tragedy, but creating hope. And I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing there. You spoke with our reporter, Gabriella Emanuel, about this work this spring. How are you working on the ground, and what's the goal?
So we've got kind of three focuses as an organization. My organization is called Healthcare Volunteers International. It's hcvi.org. And so basically, we're looking at kind of three areas of kind of dire need there. The first one is just capacity building and providing them medications, equipment, and supplies that they need. For example, I was up in Slovyansk, which is in the Donetsk province or oblast, and the hospital I was working at for about 3 weeks, doing, you know, battlefield trauma surgery and stabilization. They had no running water at the hospital. They were out of suture, out of gauze, out of just basic necessities. And so One of our goals is to be providing supplies. We have a bunch of partner organizations over here. We work with AmeriCares, MAP International to get equipment and supplies. And we brought about $1 million at this point, but we're looking to raise funds to go ahead and bring a shipping container because the needs are just, you know, just so elevated for, you know, basically trauma-related equipment, supplies,
and medication. Can you give us a couple of examples, things that you should be able to take for granted, but that you can't in terms of those supplies?
Oh, well, I mean, they were threading their own suture at the frontline hospital that I worked at because they had no standard suture. So they were sterilizing needles and threading their own suture. I haven't seen that in like 30 years as a doctor. I mean, no running water at a hospital. It's really quite impressive how adaptive the Ukrainian doctors are to their situation and managing to, you know, get good outcomes despite, you know, some real significant challenges that they're facing with regards to resources.
So we are talking to Frank Duggan, who's an emergency room doctor in Hingham, but just back from Ukraine after bringing supplies and working extensively on bringing telehealth support to Ukrainian doctors. So you've given us a little bit of an outline of the supply piece. Talk a little more about the telehealth piece that you're doing, Dr. Duggan.
So from a telehealth standpoint, we initiated this at the very end of my first trip, and now we're with five hospitals. Two are kind of frontline in Kramatorsk and Sloviansk. Two are in Kharkiv, and one is in Lviv, and two are specializing in pediatric patients. And our goal with this is to kind of do a bunch of things. One, to drive efficiency within the system by providing them an electronic record, but also to provide high-end video capabilities so that the physicians in remote areas can obtain consultations either with Ukraine doctors or with doctors, you know, in the United States with regards to patient management and care.
So excuse me for interrupting, but to kind of bring that home from listeners, as I understand it, what you're talking about is a GoPro on the front of somebody's head taping what's happening with a patient while somebody remote is watching and consulting. Is that about right?
Yeah, so we're using actually several peripherals. We're partnering with an organization called Vuzix, V-U-Z-I-X, and they make a smart glass. So we're using them. We also use an organization called Surgitel, who we're partnered with, which makes a special glasses that doctors wear called Loops that can mount an HD camera. So we've got a number of different ways of visualizing. The GoPro is one avenue we're pursuing as a lower cost. The smart glasses and the HD camera systems give us up to like 50 times magnification for the viewer on the other end. So a supervising doctor could be, you know, seeing a procedure anywhere in the world, basically live stream with a physician obtaining a consultation while they're doing the surgery.
So it is really incredible, this level of support. I'm going to play a little sound from here for you here. This is a doctor named Jonathan Berkowitz out of a Center for Emergency Medicine with Norwell Health in New York. That's from a podcast called 20 Minute Health Talk. They're trying to do some telehealth in Ukraine, and here's a reflection.
They're seeing things that they haven't seen before, and a lot of this is about phone a friend, where I always get the sense that the doctor in Ukraine feels isolated. They don't have another doctor to really talk about these complicated issues, and they're really relieved at the end of these consults.
What strikes me about that, Dr. Frank Duggan, is this idea that there's the medicine of it, but there's the holding up these practitioners who are working in, well, I mean, as you reflected to us, staggeringly difficult circumstances.
Yeah, I think, I think the telemedicine, to kind of reiterate what you just played, is a lot of these doctors in Ukraine are general medical doctors. So they finish training and they work in a remote area. They might be the only physician on site. And I think that they are seeing a lot of things that they don't typically see, particularly, you know, advanced trauma. And having an ability to consult in real time, I think, is a real valuable resource to them. And also allows us to kind of extend the capabilities of that physician, maybe keep patients on site rather than dangerous and insecure travel. Much of the country is not very safe to travel in right now. And so keeping patients in their homes or in their hometown obviously is a desirable type of thing. And also this provides a value in patients who are being discharged from the hospital, enabling them to get home sooner, but also not having to come back to the hospital again through, you know, potentially dangerous areas and still receive ongoing care in a similar way that we did during COVID.
So how does an emergency room doctor in Hingham wind up doing this work in Ukraine?
Well, I've been doing volunteer work for probably since med school. I started doing overseas work. I've probably got 25,000 international volunteer hours at the present time. So I've been around the world a lot. I formed my own organization in 2014. And we have a presence in six countries now, in Southeast Asia, Latin America, and Africa. Obviously COVID, you know, put a lot of things on hold for us. And then when Ukraine, you know, occurred, I went over there initially with intentions of just kind of, you know, personally providing my own services, but then quickly saw that there's a real potential here for a lot of other things, you know, involving digital health platforms as well as, you know, supply chain issues with the different organizations over there in hospitals and battalions, and then also providing direct patient care and, you know, showing them some different ways of approaching, you know, tactical combat casualty care and doing some training and, you know, looking at different ways of doing wound management.
Can you tell us an example, Dr. Duggan, of a connection you've made to support from here in the greater Boston area that's been meaningful to you in this work in Ukraine?
Yeah, so already we're doing some consultation with Mass General Brigham. I'll give an example. This is not war related, but I think that this is, well, in some ways it is. We have a patient that we're dealing with cancer issues at the Lviv Pediatric Hospital. And they're doing their first bone marrow transplant on this child. And we're going to be using telemedicine to follow the patient up, but we're having a consultation right now with, Tom Schiffler, the individual who set up the bone marrow transplant program at Mass General is now consulting with the oncologist doing their first bone marrow transplant for the Oblast of Lviv. And we think that, again, this is a great way of kind of expanding your capabilities. Although that's not a war-related thing, we do think that, you know, these are the types of things. Remember, all the other things are still going on. They're just more difficult to manage. And so I think that we're trying to look at this as something that provides an immediate benefit for the country, for the hospitals and the providers, as well as establishing something that's going to grow into a long-term service.
And that's a piece of it, too. We talked earlier about this integration of tragedy and hope, and you've got tens of thousands of hours of service. This technology, these approaches with telehealth that bring expertise from all over the world to a moment in a place that's acute— what's possible in the future as we get good at this?
Well, I think that this is not new technology. I think a lot of this is, you know, when we talk about telemedicine, telesurgery, teleradiology, a lot of it is just having some, you know, usually video form of communication tied in with some electronic record. The electronic record is a hard part because those are expensive. And so, I developed one on Google's ecosystem. Google really drives much of what we do as an organization, and we attribute a lot of our success to the capabilities that Google provides us as a nonprofit that's working with them. But we've been doing this since 2014, and one of the biggest advantages to it is, from a patient care standpoint, it allows capable physicians who, like your doctor mentioned, who may be seeing things that are maybe outside their zone of comfort. You know, they haven't done it very much, or they haven't done it recently, but would like some support or would like some guidance, but have good surgical skills that can be guided through a procedure. You don't have to take a pediatric neurosurgeon from, you know, Mass General and bring them to Cambodia or bring the patient over, which dramatically decreases your cost. I mean, we're talking like $1 million difference in cost to, you know, let's say do a complex neurosurgical procedure with guidance on site, you know, via, you know, smart glasses or, you know, video resources, or bringing the patient over or sending the doctor, which is, again, much more complicated, you know, probably less good for the patient and their family. And so we've been doing that since 2014, very successfully. I think that one of the things in the organization that we look at is we look at ways that we can, you know, kind of leverage technology to create low cost, high impact solutions that are scalable. Yeah. And the scale is a big thing with us. It's something, and when we're looking at everything we're doing, we're looking at, you know, how do we go ahead and drive that to a much, much bigger number and a greater number of people to access.
So before we let you go, that gets to a question that's been niggling in the back of my mind. I mean, some of this sounds almost like science fiction, things that would have been unimaginable 10 years ago. But everyday challenges around just good enough internet and language barriers. How are you addressing those things, especially in crisis zones?
So internet, I think for me, there's no better investment anywhere you go than in broadband. It's no matter what it costs, it's going to be cost effective when you go ahead and, you know, run the return on investment over a period of time and the number of users. So we, you know, for example, in Cambodia at the National Children's Hospital, we set up and ran their entire digital network for the hospital for them.
So you set it up to make sure it was there.
Yeah, I mean, they had no internet beforehand. You know, everything was paper-based, and you need the internet to go ahead and achieve these productivity gains and efficiency gains and quality gains that you know, the ability to exchange information easily and to collaborate, you know, enables. And so that's one of the things we focus on, actually, right when we get into a hospital, is looking at their internet services. And, I mean, in all the locations I was at, that was something that we upgraded and that we're, you know, investing money in to have them have more reliable and higher speed internet connections throughout the hospital and throughout the areas that we work. So that's, I mean, something that's a very important component of this.
And just briefly, the language?
The language barrier? Again, Google Translate's amazing.
There you go.
I saw this morning a patient who I'm managing for a complex foot wound. This guy had had a sarcoma on his foot, and he had a partial resection, but the wound has been open and infected since last August. And we're now about 3 weeks into treatment, and the wound's healing extremely well. But he's sending me pictures on a daily basis and of his wound, and we're managing dressing changes with some special dressings called hydrocolloids, and then we're communicating back and forth using Google Translate pretty effectively.
That's wonderful.
And I've got probably, I mean, this last week I've seen people in Nicaragua. I speak Spanish fluently, so that's not an issue, but I've seen people in Cambodia, and I've seen a number of people in Ukraine in the last week who I'm doing patient follow-up on patients that did surgery, and we're communicating extremely effectively using Google Translate. It's really amazing that that's improving, yeah.
That is Dr. Frank Duggan, who is an emergency room doctor from Hingham, but serving around the world. Dr. Duggan, thank you for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.